Hello, this is Peter Fisher, and this is episode one of what I'm calling sequence two of the Fisher Files. And today's topic is imposter, and we'll also have comments on earlier podcasts. So I've been doing this for a while, and I guess in the original General One podcast, there were 19, and in the last series, there are 12. And so this is sequence two, the second round of podcasts for the Fisher Files. And lately, I've been starting to get a lot of comments, which is really nice, because I went through the whole General One podcast and got two or three comments, all from the same person. And almost all the way through the Fisher Files, I don't think I got any comments. And then kind of about the time I was done, a whole bunch of people came up to me and said that they were liking it. So that was really nice. I did also hear one, I wouldn't call it a complaint, but one comment that actually came from two people quasi-independently, about something I had said, which I have to admit was really not very well thought out, nor was it very kind. This is from episode 8, which I called Stuff, and it was about the stuff that, you know, accumulates in our lives and how to do it. And specifically, I was talking about the today folder, into which you stick all the things that you're going to do today. I'm going to just go back and replay the relevant segment of episode 8. I don't sit down and do all the things in my today folder each day. I usually try to set aside some time during the week, although sometimes it accumulates over a couple of weeks. And that's one thing that you've got to recognize as an academic, that there are a few things that are high priority that have to get done on a timely basis. But the reporting, the fiscal stuff, that's really pretty lax. And there's no reason to hold yourself to the kind of standard that you'd have to have if you were in a law firm or business where, you know, it was very much in your interest to process all of the pending things each day, because those pending things would be urgent court filings, customers' orders, responses to letters of inquiry about products. Academic is much more social, much more direct, and much, much looser about deadlines and things like that. And I just don't see any point in adhering to a standard that's much, much greater than that of my colleagues. So the today folder can get kind of full. Okay, now, that might have sounded relatively innocuous to most of you. I wasn't really thinking when I said it, but there are a lot of people who listen to this, and they're not all academics, and some of them are people who are in charge of sort of processing the stuff that I output. I mean, my output is their input. And they sort of took umbrage at, and rightfully so, at my comment that deadlines are lax, and the fiscal stuff is not very important, and you can let it accumulate for a few weeks, and why should I hold myself to a higher standard than my colleagues? And to be honest, I don't really remember what I meant when I was saying that. I remember some of what I meant. What I was really trying to say, and I do apologize for not saying it very well, because it certainly doesn't reflect how I feel, but maybe not how I act. Anyway, what I was really trying to say is the best thing to do is really set aside some time each week where you go through and do all of the administrative stuff. So let me just use myself for example. I travel, and when I travel, I spend money on my credit card that I need to get reimbursed for. So I have to fill out a voucher and provide receipts. I buy stuff, and stuff comes in, and I have to send out the packing slips so that the people know to send money, that I actually got what I ordered. There's some fiscal reporting that I have to do each month. It's not very onerous, but it's got to be done. And there's letters of reference that I have to write, other kind of letters and reports and things that I have to do. All things that I need to do in order that I get reimbursed for money I spend, that people who I buy things from get paid, and that people who are members of my community, both at MIT and further abroad, advance in their careers. And all of those things are important, and I honestly believe them. And I don't believe it's right to just not do them or do them way after the deadline. What I was trying to say in that little segment that I just replayed is that those things don't have to be done instantly. That it is better to use the time during the day for interacting with people and going to seminars and taking care of the things that can only be done while at MIT or wherever you're working, and when other people are around. And I generally try to do all of those things in the evening, where it's quiet and I can just sit down and do them quickly without interruption, and that I'm not doing something else that can only be done at a certain time. I didn't say that very well. The evening is a time when I can really concentrate on those things better than during the day. Now, I must confess, there have been times when I've gotten way, way behind on those things, and that creates a lot of trouble for other people. And developing thinking about these organizational things is not just connecting the big with the small, but trying to be a better colleague and a better member of my laboratory and community and department. What I was trying to do is create a contrast with somebody who works in an office as a, for example, salesperson or a doctor or a lawyer who can't do that. If you're a lawyer and there are court filings that come in and you have to do them right then you've got to do them right then. That is your job. And what I'm trying to emphasize, and this is kind of a major theme in these podcasts, is that, you know, as students and researchers, our job is a big part of our job is to pursue ideas and think about things, and that the administrative stuff is very important, but should be done at a time that is best, that is not best used for the more social and interactive things. So I just want to make it super clear that I do really believe and encourage people to try to take care of the administrative things in a timely fashion, but also in a way that's mindful about using time as well as we can. Okay, let me say a little bit about the second sequence. Now I've gotten, actually at this point, quite a number of comments. And so what I'm doing is I'm putting together some episodes based on those comments. And please send more. Anybody who wants to come and do a guest podcast, we could probably even work out a way of doing it over the phone. That would be great. I kind of sit here late at night with my cat sitting on me, and it's kind of nice. But it'd be really fun to do a podcast with someone else. So tonight we're going to talk about imposter. We're all imposters, and we should recognize that. Episodes I have planned coming up. One is about the Linux, Unix, Windows debate, the PC, Mac debate, and all the other kind of silly debates that we fall into about whether it's better to use one thing than another and how to think about that. I'm also thinking about a podcast called Getting Screwed. A fact of life is that there are people who are going to take advantage of you. And this is in response to one specific email that I got. And I think it's good to talk about it. And I think it's good to talk about how to think about it, because, it can be pretty bad. And I speak from experience that someone can really take bad advantage of you, and it's just like really, really unpleasant. And then I have a few more things. I haven't really completely worked out the whole schedule. But if anyone has anything they'd like me to talk about and think about, please send email, and I will get to it. I took a longer hiatus than I expected because I was really kind of getting pretty burned out. So tonight I wanted to talk, again, this was in response to an email I got. I actually was corresponding with somebody who had a number of really, really delightful suggestions, and I don't want to use the person's name, but they probably know who they are. And, I was kind of wading through with them, and I said, oh, look, if you're around in Boston, why don't we do a podcast together? And the response was, oh, no, well, I don't have anything to say. I'm just a graduate student, and, I really shouldn't even be wasting your time with this. I don't know, something very self-effacing. But it kind of reminded me of something that I think is very common, and that's the imposter syndrome. Now, let me explain what this is. So there are certainly people, and probably more than we'd like, who are really very, very confident in their abilities and kind of skate along through their career and never really seem to worry about anything. And then there are the rest of us who kind of go through graduate school, particularly in the beginning, waiting for someone to come along and say, look, we admitted you by mistake, and it'd be better if you just left. And, it's actually, I think, quite common because, here we are in a place where there are a lot of people who have achieved a lot and seem very, very smart, and it's easy to look at one's own accomplishments and compare them with other people's accomplishments and really think, wow, I haven't done much. And, probably everybody knows that. Probably everybody just thinks, I'm some loser who got here for some reason other than merit. And, I really shouldn't be there. And, I feel this way, as a 47-year-old tenured professor who's head of a division. I mean, sometimes I sit in physics council where we, are deciding which person to hire, and I'm looking at all these these candidates, and I'm thinking, like, man, like, everybody, every one of these 30-year-olds has achieved so much more than I have. And, you know, here I am deciding which one gets a job as an assistant professor here. That just ain't right. I had the same feeling on the Pappalardo committee. You know, just like every one of these guys is like better than I am. I don't actually think it's too bad to feel that way, to some extent, as long as it doesn't become debilitating. However, I mean, that said, a little humility is a good thing. But I think it's also important to be able to, at some level, recognize one's self-worth. And I don't have a really good way of doing that. But what I can comment on is how to avoid kind of falling into the trap of you know, getting too down on yourself. So certainly one thing to be aware of is if you're looking at a group of people, it's easy to forget that what you're looking at is a group of individuals with individual achievements. And you kind of look at a group of people and take the and of their achievements and their abilities and compare them with yours, and, you know, of course, you're going to lose on that. So it's important to remember that there are individuals making up the aggregate. It's also important to remember that people see very, very different things, and it's easy to forget that. At a certain time, one has had very significant achievements that people recognized and continued to recognize. And okay, maybe at that week you haven't done anything really great, or that month, or that year, but your colleagues do remember that some number of years ago or months ago, you know, you did something really good, and that just isn't immediately forgotten when somebody else does it very good. I mean, look to yourself and look to how you feel about people and apply that to yourself. And also realize that one of the most wonderful things about being in the academic world is you're only one idea, one good idea away from greatness, to a certain extent. That it's different from some professions where you kind of climb a ladder, and you know, before you get to be vice president, you're whatever is below vice president. In academics, it still is very much a meritocracy, and if you do something really good as a graduate student, it's not diminished by the fact that you're a graduate student. So always remember that the thing to be really concentrating on is what's coming up, not what's happened. There was really kind of an interesting piece on NPR the other day. I don't remember. It would take me a long time to find it. It was on a website and a service that the Army runs, so that field officers and I believe enlisted men and non-commissioned officers, you know, sergeants and things, can share ideas about, you know, various techniques to survive in Iraq, and can send in questions by email. And you know, the guy mentioned, one of the kind of counselors who responds to these emails mentioned that one of the most common things, the common emails he gets is a guy who just became sergeant and is now commanding a group of, you know, 12 guys in combat, so he's, you know, very, very responsible for their lives. And as you can imagine, this is pretty daunting. And the guy who kind of responds to their queries says, one of the things he says is have confidence in what you know. And there's actually a lot of wisdom to that. It's never a bad idea to stop and think about what you really know and what you can do, and particularly when you're kind of getting down on yourself that maybe you don't feel like you're doing very well. But it's good to reflect on what you've learned recently and how it might be valuable. I kind of hate to say this, but this is one reason I think general exams are a really good idea, is that they early on in your graduate career really give you a mark that you've achieved something. Getting through the general exams is very much an important achievement, and if you've done that, even if you've only done General 1, you can still now look back and say, this is something I've done, this is something I've demonstrated that I know. And, you know, you can look at your undergraduate degree the same way. I mean, it's not a meaningless piece of paper. It's acknowledgement from someone that you completed a course of study, and that's not insignificant. And this is kind of true, you know, all the way up. You know, it's always good to really understand what you've done. Now, there's the other issue, which is, and this is becomes more and more prevalent as you get further and further along, is that you have to judge people. It starts about the time you're a junior faculty member and you're on something like the Pappalardo Committee or a committee to invite people to come give the colloquium or seminar. You have to write letters for students to go to graduate school or, you know, wherever they're going next. And you have to make judgments about them. And this is a hard thing to do because I think basically we all want to like each other, and we don't want to have to write in a letter that someone is not very capable, or, you know, write something that is going to hurt a person's career. And this, coupled with, you know, sort of the imposter syndrome, can make it very difficult to render good judgments. I know I've felt this way. I think the best way to handle this is to really view these things as, you know, part of your job and something that you have to do, and really one of those things that you have to do pretty well. And you really have to set aside, you know, how you're feeling about it, and try to be as objective as you can, as honest as you can. Some people take the approach of just writing effusive letters about everyone, and that will catch up with you relatively quickly. One of the things when you become a professor, one of the main things that you do is you have graduate students who you want to get good postdoctoral positions, eventually faculty positions, and undergraduates who you want to help get into good graduate schools. And if you don't render good judgments, you know, if you write a really good letter for someone who, you know, turns out to be very obviously a dud, you do that a couple of times and suddenly doors close. So you really have to try to be very honest about people. Now, that doesn't mean that you have to be, you know, really negative about somebody who's not very good. You have to really take the time and try to make a really proper assessment of the people and communicate that in a letter. And actually, if I think I do this pretty well, but after a while, it's really not that hard to do. You can do it pretty well in a short letter. One thing about recommendation letters is if they're long, it doesn't really help. You know, some people think, write a very long letter that shows I really know what I'm talking about. Keep in mind that whoever's reading a letter of recommendation might be reading 40 or 50 of them and will be happy, nay, grateful, if you just get to the point and not mess around too much. Some people take the approach that they just don't want to judge others and don't want to make the kind of decisions that impact people's career. And that's not doing your job. And you really have to become good at it and thoughtful about it. You can't avoid it. This is probably true of any profession, but it's particularly true in academics, where really the bulk of judgments are made on, you know, personal contact. So it's really important that you develop the ability to, you know, set any imposter kind of feelings that you have aside and try to render good clear judgments about people. So, in this week's Mind Feed, I wanted to talk a little bit about something fun that I've been doing with Marin and Aristos and Andre and John Joannopoulos, which is called Whytricity. My part of the story starts in a Thursday faculty lunch. Every Thursday during term, the faculty gets together and one person presents the research they've been working on. And this particular lunch, which, it's, I guess, a year ago, Marin Soliacic was talking about a theoretical idea he had for wireless energy transfer. And I really didn't pay attention through most of it. I think I was talking to Dave Pritchard and then asleep. But at the end of it, Marin was showing how you could have a transmitter that would transmit a lot of electrical power into, in that particular case, an electric field. You could set it up so that the thing didn't radiate much power, but there was a lot of energy in the near field. And then with a resonator that resonated at exactly the right frequency with a high Q, there could be very efficient energy transfer between the transmitter and the receiver. And so I was kind of interested in that and looked at what he was thinking about and kind of realized that, you know, that's really not too hard to build. And I think a couple of days later we had lunch and we talked about it a little bit, and maybe we had two lunches, I don't really remember. But then I just remember we didn't do anything for like 3 or 4 months for no particular reason other than we were just doing other things. But then in the fall, last fall, we kind of got together along with Aristos and Andre and Robert Moffat, and in a pretty short period of time, came up with a design and built it down in the lab in Building 44, and were able to transmit 60 kilowatts of power across a distance of 7 or 8 feet with pretty high, you know, 30-40% efficiency. And Marin and company wrote up a patent application, And I think Andre wrote a really nice paper that we submitted to Science. And Science got excited about it and put it in their Science Express. So it appeared pretty quickly, just a few weeks ago. And then JJ had his guys from the Institute of Soldier Nanotechnology make a nice press release, which I've put in the program notes. And this really kind of took off. There was a huge number of stories, and we all got interviewed a bunch of times. Marin got interviewed a lot because he was kind of the leader of the whole thing. And it looks like it's kind of taken off. And the reason I'm mentioning this is, number one, it's just kind of fun. But I think it's a very good example of, you know, why we're at a place like MIT. And, you know, because there are people around who will say things. And I think, you know, I think Marin got a lot of mileage out of the theoretical calculation. And, but I think, you know, had he not given that talk and had I not been there listening, we wouldn't have taken the next step. And, you know, this might be something big, maybe not, but it's fun. And so the lesson kind of here is that you never know when you're going to go to a lunchtime seminar or colloquium or something and hear something that's really exciting and will, you know, change your life or at least give you, you know, Andy Warhol's 15 minutes of fame. So that's it for next week. Please, if you'd like me to talk about anything or have any comments, please send them in, and I'll get to them. I'm going to be broadcasting weekly and posting on Monday nights, so if you just go to the website, look then. Otherwise, RSS will just tell you when to look. I'd like to thank Sheila and John Marston for continued inspiration and support, and Sean Thompson and Maynard Galinas for computing help, and Homer Reed and Bonna Newman from REFS. And until next week, have fun with your work and your life in Cambridge or wherever you are.